Okay, yeah, so welcome to this final SIM card related talk for today at least. I'm not sure if there are more next couple of days, but at least for today it is the last one related to SIM cards, which is called Anatomy of the eSIM Profile. We've talked about many different things before, either here or at other events. So this is specifically about the eSIM profile, right? It's not a talk about how eSIM remote provisioning works, like how the profile is installed into an EUICC. It's not a talk about what an EUICC is and how it works. It's really the structure and content and so on of the eSIM profile, which is this virtualized content that used to be a physical SIM, which now is become a blob that gets installed into the physical EUICC. There's some other talks again for mostly for the recorder. If somebody watches the talk, there's some other talks with more basic basic topics related to SIM cards and eSIM technology. So terminology: classic SIM cards, SIM application smart cards. Not relevant here. It's just the evolution. UICC is the universal integrated circuit card, a multi-application smart card. Then the USIM came around as an application on that card. The iSIM came around as another application on that card. Then we hit the EUICC, which is a hardware, the physical hardware that can host eSIM profiles. And the eSIM profile is this virtualized logical SIM that runs on an EUICC. And I'm going to talk a bit about how this is structured and what it is and try to make some analogies. Some are good, some are bad, most of them are bad. But yeah. Let's try to sort of wrap our head around what it is. So some people may be inclined to think an eSIM is sort of like VM. If you have multiple eSIMs running on a physical EUICC, this is like running VMs on a virtual machine in the PC side. Well, it's a nice analogy because most people know what VMs are and have an idea of how this works, but it doesn't really work. Because eSIM profiles are mostly file system data and not the executable code for the USIM or iSIM. Yeah, so I thought there was a spelling mistake, but there is not. So, and that file system content is structured data and not a binary blob of a block device or something you have in a VM. So that doesn't really match here. And also, at least present day EUICCs conformant to version 2.x of GSMA SGP 2122. Only have one eSIM active at any given point in time. So again, the VM analogy doesn't match because you can run any number of VMs until your system is overloaded. So not really a good analogy. Maybe containers, well, yeah, maybe slightly closer analogy to think of containers because, well, containers also isolate containers from other containers and eSIM profiles live isolated in their own security domain from other security domains that have eSIM profiles. But again, it's mostly file system data and not executable code that we're talking about here. There can be executable code inside, but not the code for the actual SIM functionality. So it's not so good either. So what is it reality? Well, in reality, we have some data structures that describe a file system content and all these permissions that relate to the file system you have on a USIM or iSIM application, or I think even for some other options. So it's a bit more like, let's say, a tarball of a directory tree, because a tarball of a directory tree includes the file names, the sizes, the modification date, the user IDs, you know, so things like the permission bits. So you have like a bit of metadata in your tarball and the actual files, names, and the file contents. So that is a rather close analogy for that part. And then you also have, in addition, one or multiple PIN codes and possibly related PIN unblocking codes that relate to the PIN or PUC in the USIM or iSIM application. And then we have also the shared secret key material for the authentication algorithm, which is the K and OP or K and OPC values in there. And then optionally, in addition, beyond that data files, we can also have, let's say, executable files, meaning card applications that are inside the eSIM profile which then actually get executed on the card. So there we have, for this part, we have the VM or container analogy, more container analogy probably is working. So that's sort of what it is. And there's some more details, otherwise the talk would be over now, right, that we look into. So let's look a bit at the context to understand like how this fits all in. So an eSIM profile is prepared in something called the SMDP Plus. That's the Subscription Management Data Preparation Plus, actually, server. eSIM profiles initially exist as something called the UPP, the Unprotected Profile Package. And these eSIM profiles are 99% identical, typically, for all subscribers, or at least all subscribers of one class of subscribers at an operator, like physical SIM cards. Also, if you buy 100 Deutsche Telekom SIM cards today, then they will all be, you know, 99.9% identical, except some fields that have modifications, which is the so-called personalization in the card. So the personalization process takes sort of a generic UPP, an unprotected profile package, and it changes those files and those information bits that have the data that is unique per subscriber, like IMSI, ICC ID, MSISDN, if it's stored on the card, key materials, PIN codes, and so on. So that's the personalization process. At the end, you have a personalized unprotected profile package, and after that, you have all the cryptographic operation like message authentication code and encryption, and that's then what the protected profile package is. And finally, and the bound profile package. The details don't matter here in this context. There's other talks about this. So the bound profile package, which is the BPP, is what you finally download into the EUICC over the interface called ES9 Plus in the consumer eSIM universe. And now, how does this format look like? We are not looking at the encrypted protected, but of course looking at the decrypted original format, that's the UPP. And this data format actually is interesting because it's not specified by ETSI and not specified by 3GPP and not specified by GSMA. GSMA specifies the entire eSIM and everything. But the data format for the profile is actually specified by an entity that was originally called the SIM Alliance and is now called the Trusted Connectivity Alliance. It's yet another standardization body. They have a spec which is called the Profile Package Interoperable Format. Sometimes it's abbreviated as SAIP, so SIM Alliance Interoperable Package Format. The set has been rebranded, and there's many different versions of that spec. Latest one, last time I checked, was version 3.3.1. In production, probably you won't really see, at least I haven't seen much beyond 2.3. That doesn't really matter. And this specification now contains, well, an ASN1 syntax, like any good telecom specification, right? If you have a telecom spec that doesn't have ASN1 inside, you should be suspicious if it's a true telecom spec. So, and the ASN1 syntax describes so-called profile elements, it's short PE. And a profile element, well, name sort of self-explanatory. We look at different profile elements in the next couple of slides. And it also contains some guidance and explanations about the data format, some constraints on ordering, the quantity, how many of these profile elements can you have, at which position, and so on. So all kinds of human readable language describing constraints. And then you have the so-called file system templates, and we will look at that later on as well. So this UPP, this profile element, so the UPP is not a single ASN1 DER that you can just throw in a decoder, but you actually, it's a binary blob, and you need to sort of parse the first BER or DER element in there, throw it in the decoder, and then after you did that, you need to get the next chunk, just based on the encoding rules. I mean, you can, without knowing the ASN1 syntax, based in BER and DER, you can get a rough high-level TLV structure. You don't know what it means, but you at least know it's that long, and it goes from here to here. And these consecutive chunks you need to throw in decoders again, because it's really, as I said, a concatenation of profile elements. And yeah, each of them are described in ASN1 syntax. So we have types like generic file management, which basically is a generic tile that can generate any arbitrary file, even files that do not exist or are not specified today. Basically, it's a file with this file identifier, and it's this length, and so on and so on. And then we have profile elements, for example, for PIN and PUC codes, aka parameter, well, as usual, my spelling mistakes, well, for authentication. Also, they cover CDMA, CDMA 2000, so that's different authentication mechanisms, so you have different parameters for this. Then we have the security domain, which describes a global platform security domain. We have RFM, remote file management, profile elements, or applications. This is the actual card, like an application on the card. And then you see lots of file system or application specific profile elements, like for the master file, the MF, for CD, which is, what was CD? I think some CDMA stuff. Telecom, for the DF Telecom on a card, and USIM, and optional stuff for USIM, ISIM, optional stuff for ISIM, and so on. I'm not going to read the slide. So lots of additional elements. The ordering of those is highly relevant. So for example, if you have first a profile element saying, this is the profile element for the USIM, so the PE USIM, and then you have a profile element describing a PIN code, that PIN code is for the USIM, right? And then if you have a profile element for the ISIM and then a PIN after that, then this PIN refers to the ISIM because it always refers to the last application that was previously in the sequence. And there are all these, lots of these cross-references and constraints, so the ordering is highly significant. And also, like, you could encode it in any kind of order, but as I said, there are all these constraints that you need to look into. And also, let's say if there's an application, the application profile element doesn't tell you in which security domain it goes. It goes in the last security domain that was previously in the sequence of these profile elements. So this is all, it means to be parsed from the beginning to the end. Basically, I guess it's due to the small microcontroller size with very limited RAM in the EUICC, so you cannot really read the whole thing and then sort of build the whole picture and put it all in place, but you need to be able to read and decode it step by step and then sort of push it into your non-volatile state in the flash and then go to the next step without keeping a lot of state between those individual steps. So yeah, that needs to be. So how does it look like? Well, we can have a PE header, that's the profile element header. That is not the header of the PE sequence, but it's the header that is in each profile element. And this header basically is very simple. It has a, I've never seen a null type in ASN1 syntax before in telecom. It's quite interesting. An optional null, so it basically is like a Boolean, but they express it as an optional null for whatever reason, right? So it can be null or it can be not null, which is basically the same as true or false, but expressed in a different way. And so if the mandated field is not null, then basically this means that an EUICC receiving this profile element must be able to understand and act according to it. If it cannot, it must reject this eSIM profile. And anything that is not with the mandated flag, the eSIM can just drop if it doesn't support it. It can just ignore it. Then there is, identification number of this profile element. Not sure what that, don't recall what this is used for right now. I guess mostly for error messages. If you have errors, then the EUICC can report, well, there's an error at this point in the profile, I couldn't parse that part, and something like that. So then we have the profile header, which is the profile element in the beginning of the sequence of profile elements. And the profile header now it contains stuff the minor and major version. So this is taken from 2.3 of the spec, so that's why these numbers are in there. There's a profile type string that is not really, it's just for human interface. We have the ICC ID of the profile that's more relevant. That gets also displayed, for example, if you look at your local profile assistant in the phone, you get all the different eSIMs installed, and then the profile name and the ICC ID are being displayed for the user, so they know what they basically which one they want to choose. There's some other stuff, I'm not going to go into all these details. What's interesting is this mandatory AID sequence, which basically also again is sort of the profile can specify the EUIC must support all these applications. If not, again, it must be rejected. So this is sort of how you can, because there's lots of optional features that an EUICC may provide, and the eSIM profile then can decide whether this must be supported or not to be compatible. Now, how does a file, since a lot of stuff is files, how does a file represented in there? These are the, as usual, need to read from bottom to top. So the file object is basically it's also quite interesting, it's a sequence of a choice, meaning that you can have any number of any of these three in any order, like from the ASN1 specification point of view, but of course the human readable language then tells you like what is permitted in which way and in which order, if at all. So there's lots of constraints that you could violate and you need to check there if you want to encode something like this. So you have the file descriptor, FCP. FCP is the name also in all the smart card specs, so this is one-to-one basically what a file, like the management of the file system of a smart card needs to do. We have the file ID, the directory file name, life cycle status, integer, the LCSI, that's the life cycle of that file, whether it's active or terminated or whatever. Security attributes, like what, who has which kind of permissions on that, and so on. So all kinds of stuff. The file fill file offset and fill file content now is how you can specify what should be in the file. So you can say add offset such and such in the file, this blob of data should be written when the profile is instantiated. There you can actually have multiple of those repeated, and the fill file content must follow the fill file offset because it relates to the previous fill file offset in that sequence of elements in there. Of course, you cannot have multiple file descriptors for the same file, that would be not permitted, or have fill file content before the file descriptor, that would also not be permitted, but they still phrased it in this way. So this is for a single file, and now for parts of the file system, we have these profile elements here. This is the smallest example for the master file, the root file system basically, a root directory, you could say. We have the PE header, that's the generic header, template ID, I will get to that later, and then we have lots of files, and some of them are not optional, so they must be provided by the eSIM profile, and some of them are optional, so if they don't exist, those files just don't get created on the card, on the virtual eSIM card, well, whatever, you know what I mean. So then we have authentication parameter profile elements. So here we see for authentication, it can be Millenage, TUAC, or the test algorithm, the XOR 3G. And you have all these different options in there, like rotation constants for TUAC, those exist. The number of Keshak iterations is also TUAC related, doesn't have significance with Millenage, but then, details. We also have the security domain PE, and each security domain then has its AID, of course, and it has all the key materials for any of the secure channel protocols that anyone might be able to establish to the security domain in the future. And then you have application profile elements for the Java applets and stuff like remote file management parameters for RFM and many more. There's more, but this is sort of the, yeah. So yeah, we can browse an eSIM profile. I think we still do that at the end. Let's go through the slides. If we remember here, there is this template idea object identifier. I said, well, we will get back to that later. So templates. The storage space on an EUICC is fairly limited, and also maybe sometimes like the download process, the file should also be, the profile should be as small as possible to install. And many files, for example, have the same metadata in terms of permissions and size irrespective of the operator. So, because basically the 3GPP spec says, well, this file, in order to write it, you must be authenticated with PIN 1. And then, of course, every SIM card on the planet will encode it this way, no matter which operator or which subscriber of any operator. And these templates basically take you away from repeating this redundant information that's sort of clear anyway. So the spec contains a number of templates in like table format that tell you, well, basically the default size and permissions and whatnot for this file, or even sometimes the default content, is such and such. And then there is templates. Yeah, there's two different templates, the created by default templates and the not created by default templates. So if you reference a template using the object identifier from this template OID that I just showed, that is a created by default template, it means all the files in this template are created by default unless you override it in your specific eSIM profile. And the other one is the other way around. So basically, you refer to a template, but the template should only be used if actually this specific profile says create this file. But then you don't need to repeat all the generic parameters, but it looks up in this well-known profile where this information comes from. So this is a template example from the spec for the master file. So you basically say, well, yeah, these are all the files, these are the file identifiers, the number of records, the size, the default value, and so on. And whether the content is required to be provided by the eSIM profile or not, that's sort of what this means in these templates. Now, given all this information, can I create my own eSIM profiles? Yes, everyone can create it. The spec is public, right? But you cannot download them simply into a production EUICC because in order to authenticate against it, you need to have this bound and protected profile package which is authenticated and signed on with key material that's derived from the GSMA root of trust, from the certificate authority of GSMA. In order to get that, you would have to be a GSMA accredited, GSMA SASSM accredited SMTP plus operator. So that's the security accrediting scheme data preparation. I think it's SAS subscription management. Yeah, sorry. So the security accrediting scheme subscription management. And that, if you want to do this, you have to do all the work, of course, to comply with this, and then it's on average every year about 15,000 to 17,000 euros in auditing costs. To just pass all the audits again and the re-audits. And that's in the case where you always pass all the audits and you never have to do a re-audit. So that's sort of the absolute minimum like external cost for the dry and wet audits, how they're called in this context. And then it also means that you have to host it at a GSMA SASSM accredited hosting site, which has all kinds of requirements, even down to the point on, you know, physical access to the site, and there's a lot of requirements and specifications, and I think to date there is not a single data center operator worldwide that has yet or has tried to or has achieved to get an independent SASSM accreditation standalone for themselves, because if such a hosting operator would exist, not all the companies that would want to run an SMTP plus wouldn't have to go through all of that again. But so since this doesn't exist, means everyone, let's say even some random company wanted to run an SMTP plus, they basically have to start from scratch with all of this security accreditation scheme, because you cannot just go to a data center that has an independent accreditation. There are some cloud service providers that have accreditation, but only for parts of the system, and the hardware security module that you need still needs to be physically located somewhere in a data center that has gone through that accreditation scheme from scratch. Because the cloud hardware security modules of any of the cloud operators are not capable of being certified according to the GSMA requirements. So it's a really contrived and difficult process. But anyway, I want to finish the talk, so I'll skip ranting about this accreditation scheme. So anyway, no random user who would want to sign their profile will get there. So what you can do, still, in order to play with this, is get something that's called an SGP26 test EUICC. This is basically an EUICC that does not have the GSMA root of trust, but it has the root of trust of the SGP26 specification. And that is a specification that contains both the private and the public keys and the certificates for testing. So basically, everyone has the private key, so everyone can sign anything for it, which is very nice for interoperability testing and development and so on, but of course it has zero security whatsoever. But that is something you can do, and there's well, at least two companies selling those, one of them being Sysmocom. You can then get such an EUICC. You can get it in a normal plastic card form factor, and you can insert it into a device that supports EUICCs, including, for example, a random Android phone. And then you can download your eSIM profiles that you created yourself into this test EUICC, and you can, yeah, you can test and develop and play with it. So that is a solution to do that, but of course it only works in a device where you can replace the EUICC. Either it's a solder type, you can room with solder a new one, or it's a plastic form factor, MFF2, 3, 4 card or something. The other option is to go for a private certificate authority. So technically, of course, you can create your own certificate authority, and you can sort of go to a manufacturer and say, well, I want to have some EUICCs that have my own root of trust in there. And then, of course, I can sign my own eSIM profiles using material derived from the certificate authority. And then I have something that I can do myself, and that is secure because nobody else has the private keys to that, as opposed to the SGP26. But then, yeah, it means basically you can only use it in your own devices, and you cannot use it on a production network other than your own network, because you don't have the key materials for like the K and OP to create an eSIM profile to download into that. So that's sort of the problem with that. And well, solution C is basically you purchase SMTP Plus subscription as a service from any of the existing SMTP Plus operators, which is typically rather expensive because they have very high sign-up fees, most of them at least do. Because usually the customer of those SMTP Plus operators that do this as software as a service, the customer is a mobile operator or an MVNO, and they do, you know, at least hundreds of thousands of profiles. And that's sort of what the pricing model, like the annual minimum subscription fees and everything is associated with. So if you want like 1 or 10 or 100, that's not really the business model of them. And then also in this case, the business model is structured, and also the process and the specs are sort of, everybody assumes that an operator creates a profile, let's say once or once every couple of years, and then there is thousands, tens of thousands, millions of eSIMs that are personalized in this profile. So adding a new profile to an SMTP Plus is usually a manual process that you have to pay for a lot of money, that the SMTP Plus operator does it. Because it also, normally the customers of those SMTP Plus operators, they have no clue what eSIM is and how it works and what an eSIM profile is. So actually it's mostly the SMTP Plus operator that prepares that eSIM profile on their behalf. And so there's a lot of manual back and forth and testing and retesting and device testing and approvals and so on. So it's an expensive one-time process, and is not something where you say, okay, today I want to like test 10 different profiles that I just created on my laptop and I want to download them into this device. That's not how this is structured. So solution D, which I managed to not just figure out, but now actually prove like the entire chain is working. So we have identified and teamed up at Sysmocom with a GSMA accredited SMTP Plus operator, and we have agreed upon an interface where we can upload an arbitrary unprotected profile package. So all the personalization happens on the Sysmocom side. We can add whatever applets or do whatever changes, or create this entire blob, the profile elements in any way we want. And then the SMTP Plus operator does the magic GSMA signing and whatever protection step. And then you can install that on any consumer EUICC in any normal production device. By using the normal QR code or activation code to install the eSIM. And that is working end-to-end, just I think a week ago or something like that, that finally worked end-to-end. And what is still work in progress is the website, where then users will be able to sort of configure their eSIM and personalize some profiles and click on the button to upload it to the SMTP Plus, and then from there those can be installed into the EUICCs. Of course, this will be since the SMTP Plus operators charge money for that, so Sysmocom will charge money for that. So it will be basically the equivalent of the Sysmocom USIM that's fully configurable and whatnot, that you can do that but install it in a virtual way in a normal consumer device. Yeah, there's a question from Sabrit. I will be repeated. Yeah.
For any kind of changes to the SIM, for example, after provisioning, does it have to again go through the SMTP Plus for rolling up or something? Or?
So the question was for any additional changes after originally, after the first installation of that eSIM, how does it work and does it go through the SMTP Plus? Well, the profile, of course, can specify whatever permissions you want. So like in a Sysmo USIM, you can specify, this is the ADM1 pin, and it should be able to write all these files. The question is, how do you issue, let's say, an update file or something to the eSIM profile in an EUICC in a normal consumer device? So if you have a path of doing that, there's multiple of them that can be done, then let's say some AT command to pass APDUs to the SIM card in some implementation, or maybe some QMI interface that you have access to send this command. Or actually you can put an Android carrier privilege app that sort of allows you to send SCP to the EUICC. So then you can do all of that stuff locally, right? If you configure your profile that way. But if you want, the other alternative would be, but that might be phase two of this, maybe next year, is that we would also run an OTA server, so that you could basically push stuff to the OTA, which then would send it over the air, to, over your test network or Wi-Fi or whatever connectivity that the device is attached to, onto the eSIM profile in the EUICC. But that's not that's like ideas for the future, not a concrete plan at the moment. So yeah, that is the goal, which finally will bring us to the point where give us the same level of freedom and configurability and modifiability that we had with basically ever since I think the first Magic SIMs in, I don't know, when did we start with this, 2009, 10, whatever, around that time. So finally, you know, 14 years later, we will be at where we started and overcome all this nightmare with eSIM. So what is the time? Okay. What is the support for all of this in PySIM? I created a submodule pySIM.eSIM.saip, which contains a lot of library code for all this stuff. A PySIM representation, a class profile element, file one for the file, well, obviously. We have all the templates in Python format, so and we have code that actually can merge the template with the specific profile to actually get you what will really end up in the file. So this process that is described in the spec. There's some validator that will do validation of ordering constraints of these profile elements, for sure not covering all of the cases, but at least some basic coverage. And there is a personalization module which contains code. You can basically throw the UPP at it, and then let's say a dictionary with IMSI, ICC ID, and all kinds of values, and it will sort of personalize that UPP and put these things into it. Yeah, that's also what will be internally used by this Sysmocom website that I mentioned to do the personalization. So it's basically just a backend code, the library that will be used there. So yeah, that is all in my tests working. This is all in master. But of course, one could write a lot of tools already based on this library. That hasn't happened yet. So for example, one easy tool would be add this cap file, so add this Java applet to a UPP. That should be super easy to do with all this code or other things that could be there. I also have this idea, unfortunately, do I have a slide about this? Yes, okay. So let's wait for that. So if you want to create an eSIM profile, where to start? Well, GSMA has published these test profiles. They are in TS48, GSMA TS48, which has all kinds of different variants and versions, with or without BER TLF, with or without 5GS support. And they're published as zip files checked into a Git repo. You can find it there. I think I created another Git repo where I actually check all of them in plain text form, which seems, plain DER form, which seems to make more sense, but yeah. So that's that. And yeah, that's the question, future PySIM support. Well, What I'm certainly going to do is a command line tool for doing this personalization process. So you can throw like a CSV file and a UPP, and you will get lots of UPPs, one for each of the ICC IDs that you've personalized. What would be really nice, and I've thought about this for quite some time, Lynxis knows for years now, is to have the way to edit the profile in the same way that we use PySim right now with a physical card. So you can pass CD or select a directory, and you can edit binary, update binary, whatever. The problem is, in order to do this, we need to decouple all that high-level code that is in PySim from the APDUs and talking to a card in real time. Sort of, right? That needs to be decoupled. I mean, all the code is there, yes, to decode, encode, to interpret all the data, but right now it's all assuming that there is an UICC or an USIM that we can talk to in real time over APDUs, and that doesn't really match that yet. What would also be nice, and I think it's also not too far-fetched actually to do this, is a tool for some kind of semi-automatic conversion from a physical SIM card into an eSIM profile. So you just insert the card and you say, well, make an eSIM profile from this. Of course, it cannot copy the applet files and the key material, but all the file system and the file system content should be relatively easy. Basically, it means that for all the classes that we have in PySIM representing the file system, we need to add sort of what is the location in the ASN one overall thing to encode this into, and then we could create the UPP basically from that. Like we do the export command, where we save all that stuff in some different format, it's just a different format. And now that, originally when I wanted to do this, the big challenge was to find Python tools that can actually even parse the ASN1 syntax of this eSIM stuff. But I found a library that I'm using. I forgot what it's called.
PyCrate?
Nah. Yeah. PyCrate is interesting, and it's always this extremely powerful tool that you can do many things with. But then somehow it seems to be very constrained in a sense that lots of things are, I think, not really encapsulated in the right way. So let's say, I think, at least I wasn't able to figure it out, sort of creating multiple instances of something, or if you modify something, it's like you're modifying some kind of global object that just gets modified. It's all a bit strange. So I think it's not really a general purpose library that you can use in a general purpose program. So it's nice for doing some hack, but I wasn't able to figure it out. No, but so what is used here is it's a completely telecom unrelated library for ASN1 parsing that was able to parse all that stuff, but not one of the common ones. You can check the code which it was. So yeah, further reading. We have 2 minutes for having a look at profile. Well, maybe 3-4 minutes more. Let's. Do I have a GNOME terminal here? I never use GNOME terminal, so but I found that for zooming and readability on presentations, it seems much better than normal UX term. So what do we have here? Yeah, so I have this Saib test. That's just some random code that I use to play a bit with the library. So this is just showing you how, there's this DER file that contains a profile. We open it and we use this profile element sequence class, which comes from the python.esim.saip module. And we basically instantiate that from the stuff that we read from there. This was just some commented out code, basically. But yeah, then you can iterate over the sequence of PEs and stuff like that. Let's just start this quickly. That's not good. Let's see if the perso test that is running. Okay, just dump some. Let's do that interactively. So just to see how to play with the library, so we basically we need this and then, well, okay. So we import that stuff from that. One thing I don't like about this ASN1 tool that I'm using now in this case is that you cannot like pre-compile an ASN1 spec into some Python module or something, but every time you start the program, it compiles the ASN1 syntax into some kind of representation, which is sort of a waste of resources. So now I'm just copying those two lines here into the Python shell to get this profile element sequence. Let's do it like this. So now PEs is this profile element sequence, and I see, well, it has a header, a master file, PUC codes, PIN codes, telecom PIN codes, and so on. So I get the sequence of these things that are the profile elements that consist of it. And if I look at PEs dot, I can say, well, that's the PE list, of course, which then is all the list of all these objects representing the elements in the profile sequence. But there's also helper functions. I can say get PE for type. And now the question is, what was the argument? It's some time since I did that. Yeah, so you can basically say, well, I want to get the profile element for a certain type, like the master file, and it will sort of where it is. If there's multiple of that type, then it will return a list, of course. And now, but let's do something like this, MF, and what kind of attributes does it have? So, for example, the MF.files. Let me just try from pprint, no, import, no, from, what is pprint? Is it like this? I always forget. Yeah, okay. So if we look at this, then we basically say, well, yeah, the EFAIR, the access rule references with the fill file content at a certain offset and with all these bits and pieces. So this is decoding all that in some nice Python objects, so we can handle with it, we can deal with it. Of course, you can always encode it again with like 2DR, then you get the binary stuff, it re-encodes it. So you can make some modification and then you can say 2DR and we'll re-encode it there. What else do we have here? Yeah, the template ID, it refers to the object identity and yeah, things like that. So that sort of was just very quickly. I said there's no command line tool yet, but all the library code exists to play with that already.
One question.
Yeah, I will repeat it.
This DER format basically is encoded in the ODA SMS.
So maybe you repeat the question because I didn't fully understand it anyway. So now we have the microphone, sorry.
All right. So this DER format, like whatever the master file contents, while provisioning or like changing over the air, like using an SMS, we embed it as part of the SMS PDU, right? Or is it completely different?
No, it's completely different.
Okay.
So this is really the DER that we look here is the distinct, like the ASN1 syntax from the SAIP specification, the SimAlliance interoperable profile format, and that is only specific to how an eSIM profile is communicated. So this is basically the format that is then signed and encrypted and downloaded from the SMTP Plus into the UICC, but it's not something that relates to normal OTA usage in any way. So it's a separate format. Okay, yeah, maybe one more question back there, Shinjo.
Yeah, I recall that from some of the previous talk, there were actually three types of eSIM, the eSIM profiles. One is for smartphones, one is for IoT devices, and the other might be on IoT devices without display, as far as I remember.
Yes.
And are you going to provide the eSIM profile generation for all three device types, or just for the smartphones in this time?
Yeah, I should have mentioned this initially. This is all the consumer eSIM that I'm talking about here. So this is not the M2M eSIM, it's not the IoT eSIM, which are two completely different things, completely different things, just a second. So 99.9% of what I'm saying here is also applicable to the not yet commercially introduced IoT eSIM. But probably 5% of what I said is applicable to the old M2M ESIM.
I have also a question that was also asked on the camp, but there you didn't have the answer. What's about key revocation, and especially as you mentioned, the recertification of the data center? Do I really have to recertify my data center if they can't revoke my key?
Okay, so there's two different questions. Let's get to the second first. The only interaction that there is between the SMTP plus in the data center, that's the server, and the EUICC in the device is during download of the profile. Or maybe if you want to migrate a profile from device A to device B. But let's say that the simple use case, you install an eSIM in 2024 into your device. You can use that for 10, 20 years without any need for the SMTP plus. So even if the SMTP plus operator has gone out of business or didn't pass GSMA auditing anymore, this doesn't affect the existing eSIMs that have been deployed. Now, in terms of key revocation, there are certificate revocation lists. So on the EUICC side, I know better about it. I'm not quite sure how much of that is mandatory in the specs. So there are CRLs and you can download them somewhere. I'm just not sure how many phones or do anything with it at one point. I'm sure there will be some security researchers who have researched that, but I didn't really investigate that more closely.
So I should be able to sign with a derived certificate as long as the certificate is valid?
Yes, but... That is correct. Well, yeah, as long as it's valid in the sense that the CRL of this certificate authority did not revoke that certificate, and as long as you still physically have the working hardware security module in which it rests, because those certificates never leave hardware security modules, assuming the security target of those holds true, of course. Yeah, another question over there.
Is there any limitation on what the SMDP will sign in the Sysmocom use case? So is there any customs things that they won't or are not willing to sign?
Well, supposedly they do some validation of it as well, but I don't know at which level and whatnot. And the only thing that is required is that the ICC ID is unique. So if you've once personalize something with one ICC ID, this ICC ID can never be reused. But apart from that, I'm not aware of any constraint. So far, I didn't try to send any fancy profile that doesn't conform, to my knowledge, doesn't conform to the spec. I've heard rumors from the industry that there are actually some EU ICCs you can get into a bad state if you send them strange eSIM profiles, even not intentionally. But this is just rumors. I don't have any hands-on experience with this. So maybe Lynxis first, and then Shinjo, and then we need to head for dinner.
Is the library also supporting the human-readable format of the SIM profile? I'm not sure what's the correct name in the RSN1 specs. The format you had on the slides.
ASN1 value notation. No, it doesn't support that, as far as I know. But you can, I think maybe it does JSER or something which looks rather similar. But it does not support the ASN1 value notation, which is basically another type of encoding rules that are commonly used in the industry as an alternative to DER in terms of SIM card profiles. But I don't think I found any open source ASN1 tool whatsoever that supports this value notation in either direction, reading or writing.
Yeah, well, just some comment. I have seen in Chinese marketplaces that they have harvested the EUICC from iPhones, and they have embedded inside a nano SIM based form factor, and these are sold in some Chinese online markets, and I think even in AliExpress, although I haven't personally tried it, but some of my friends did. And well, inspired by the Manabarms Ketchan, let's say if I managed to do some side channel analysis or hire someone to pour some laser analysis against the SIM chip, and I have managed to get the KI values of some of the SIMs which I have. And if I bring that thing to the Sysmocom, and are you going to sign this?
Well, Sysmocom is not signing anything. Let me phrase it like this. So we don't have any keys to sign anything. I think it's a very hypothetical case. I can't really say anything about that. Regarding the harvesting of EUICCs from phones and putting in a plastic chip, you can just buy an EUICC in a plastic card. I mean, you don't need to go to that detour. There's at least three known vendors that I know in the market that sell this, so you can just buy a plastic card. Because actually, literally, just to let you know, the physical chip, the Infineon chip that we use in the EUICC, in the Sysmo EUICC 1, is identical to the one we use in the Sysmo USIM SJA5 S17, so the one that can do Suchi. So it's the exact same chip, it's just different software and different profiles. So this, like, from the manufacturing, it's no difference whatsoever. You can just put it in a plastic card. Okay, one more question, and then we really need to go for dinner.
Okay, I wanted to ask about eSIM.me, which is not really an eSIM, right? They are doing something really specific.
eSIM.me?
.me, yes, the website.
Well, I'm not sure about the website. I mean, the card itself is a normal consumer EUICC, as far as I know. It's just as soon as you use it with any other program that is not their own LPA, it's a violation of their terms of services. But as far as I am aware, it is something that you can just use with the PySIM and other LPAC and whatever other tools. Just that legally you're not you're violating some term of service that you signed with them. But it's technically a normal EUICC.
Okay.